Wayo, good evening. It's like 9:30 p.m. in Seattle, and I think this is my fourth podcast for today, which is obnoxiously ridiculous. I don't know. I don't know if I care. I'm in a much better mood today for some strange reason, but I have no idea why. It turns out that where I live in Little Saigon, in Seattle, I'm actually on one of the key flight paths for SeaTac. So about every couple minutes, day or night, I see a plane coming in, basically like right over me, directly towards me, right through my window, so to speak. Not that that's relevant to today's podcast or this additional podcast, but I just thought I'd mention that. So Paul Craig Roberts had a couple of essays posted on Zero Hedge today. I read one and I had my own opinions about the gun control issue. If you go through my backlog of podcasts, and many of these date from when I was still on YouTube, so I translated them basically back to MP3. But if you go back through them, I have a few podcasts on gun control, especially from the Obama years. And yeah, there's more there if you're interested. But that's not the topic of this podcast. I thought I would talk about something as I don't know how to put this, as incendiary, as potentially aggravating and annoying and aggravating. And just in general, a topic that will cause a lot of Americans to just get upset, no matter what they believe. And that's the subject of 9/11. Now, I have to say, full disclosure, that I have no access to secret documents. I have no secret friends. The highest security clearance I achieved in the military, because I never went to advanced course, I never went to Fort Huachuca, which was going to be basically my main branch in the Army, military intelligence, but I got out before that. The highest clearance I have is secret. So that basically means that I didn't really have much of a clearance to see anything when I was in the Army. And so I don't have any access to secret information. I can't really tell you the full truth. Everything I'm about to tell you is just based upon really my observations since 9/11. And in general, questions that I just never felt have been properly answered in any way that a rational, logical person can confront them and at least ask questions about them. The story of 9/11, for good or for bad, true or false, and I think that most of it is probably bullshit at this point, was shoved down our throats during the first 24 to 48 hours. If you watched Fox News or CNN, within the first 2 days, people were shoving it down our throats. It was Osama bin Laden. It was Al Qaeda, which is amazing. We seem to know everything about 9/11 just too late, right? Just a day after. We knew exactly who did it. We knew how they did it. Fuck. Within a couple weeks, we had the whole fucking plan. A bunch of crazy Saudis and other Arabs went to training schools to learn how to fly planes, which essentially fly Cessnas, which, based upon my conversations that I've had with other airline pilots, you really can't go from a Cessna to a multi-engine passenger jet aircraft. It doesn't really work that way. But yeah, within a few days, and definitely within a week, we had the complete story, the complete narrative. Now, of course, it was, at least a week too late, right? I mean, it turned out that our CIA and our NSA and our FBI and all of our deep state institutions were really, really good at quickly figuring out what was going on too late. They were fucking excellent at telling us exactly who did what too fucking late. And then they dredged out this woman, I forget her name. I think that she was part of the PSYOP too, this FBI agent who claimed to know the deal, but when she sent her memos to the wrong people or the right people, nothing got done. And that's how we ended up with, the whole frickin', Department of Homeland Security, the frickin', ultimate castle that integrates all these 17 intelligence services, if you're to believe, you know, Hillary Clinton, there's like 17 of them or something. I don't know why we need more than one. But clearly we fuck it up, so we have to add more. It's kind of how the government works. You know, if the government engineered an airplane and you believe the 9/11 story, the airplane would just keep having more wings and more engines. Every time it crashed, they would just tape on another fucking wing. And, you know, it would crash again with greater likelihood. But don't tell that to a government person, because that's just how they operate, right? I remember the day of 9/11. I was at work. My ex-wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, I think that she emailed me, because I didn't even have a mobile phone yet. Like, I didn't get my first mobile phone, I think, until right after I was laid off. I worked for Rolls-Royce in Indianapolis at the time. And this isn't the automotive company. No, no, no. This is Rolls-Royce North America. They took over one of these Allison plants, these World War II plants, from, I believe, General Motors back in the 90s. And I got out of the Army in 99, and I ended up taking this job in the year 2000. So in the year 2000, I started working for Rolls-Royce in supply chain management. I was not an aerospace engineer, but just to be clear, the Rolls-Royce company is a power solutions company now. The part of the company that makes cars was sold to somebody else. So when you think Rolls-Royce, or at least back then when you would think Rolls-Royce, you would think jet engines. You would think turbines. And believe it or not, even though I was just in supply chain, you had to learn a lot about turbines. One of the things you learn, and this is going to come up in my questions, one of the things you learn about a contemporary passenger jet aircraft is that the hardest, sharpest, most dangerous projectiles on that aircraft are the engines. It isn't the aluminum frame. It isn't the plastic seat covers. It isn't any of the nasty, flimsy shit that makes up the core of the structure itself. It's the fucking titanium blades and the engines. Okay, these engines are the hard part. So if one of these planes crashes into a building, you would not expect the center damage to be the worst. Yes, you would have damage, but the most damage would come from the engines and the engine housings. Essentially, the engines would be the projectiles. Something to consider when you look at pictures of the Pentagon after 9/11 and where the engines were. Part of the bullshit, right? Anyways, I was working at Rolls-Royce, and I think I got an email from my girlfriend / ex-wife, and she was telling me about what was going on in the news, and she said a plane had hit the World Trade Center. And, you know, I'd known in the past, I believe the Empire State Building, but in the past, this kind of thing had happened. Airplanes had hit buildings. Buildings are designed to standards, believe it or not, including the World Trade Centers that no longer exist. Buildings were designed to deal with impacts. The actual engineers and architects who designed the World Trade Centers designed those things to survive a lot. At one point, I believe I read, the original designers designed them to basically kind of survive a near hit from a tactical nuclear weapon, okay? Or at least a nearby hit. So if a tactical nuke, something in the 10 to 20 kiloton range, went off a few blocks away, according to the engineers, yes, you'd probably have all the windows blown out, probably a lot of damage, but the buildings would not collapse, you know? You would actually have to hit them with a nuke to cause them to collapse. There is nobody with an engineering background who looked at those symmetric collapses on 9/11 and thought to themselves, this looks real. I was in the cafeteria when the second building collapsed, and I actually remember watching that crappy old school, you know, color TV set, and thinking to myself, how is this possible? Of course, you know, the one thing about lies, whatever kinds of lies we're told, is that often the more horrific, the scarier the truth is behind the lie, the more likely you will believe the lie, okay? If Hitler tells you that all the Jews are being sent to Madagascar, I think you'd rather believe that as an ordinary everyday German than to believe that, no, they're actually going to a death camp and they're being murdered. So on 9/11, one of the ways in which we all got pulled into the big lie was the fact that not one person I knew there, not one person wanted to admit to themselves on any level. It was almost like the most shocking thing you could imagine that the U.S. government would do this to American citizens. Now, looking back, I consider that immensely naive. I know a lot more about real American history today than I did then, which is also funny because I actually had a master's degree in history. But here's the thing, the history they teach you at the university is a kind of story. It is also a narrative, and that narrative tends to conform to whatever the current ruling class wants you to believe. And when I went to college, the current ruling class wanted to believe the kind of New World Order, globalist, triumphalist, you know, Francis Fukuyama, endism bullshit. You know, the liberal democracy's won, the Cold War's over, you know, everyone's in a big global community, everything's fucking fine. That was the shit they taught. I mean, yeah, they didn't exactly phrase it that way. It was couched in much more subtle terms. So the first thing that strikes you when you think about 9/11 and the memories you have is that at the time, and again, I was just a year out of the Army, and I had some crappy experiences in the Army. I saw some things that were really sketchy, and I was never even in combat. So it wasn't exactly like I was that naive. It's just that the layer that you had to break through, that wall, that barrier, you had to break through in order to even question the story of 9/11, it was a million miles thick. It wasn't something that anybody, unless they had spent their life up to that point completely questioning the government, it wasn't easy for the average everyday Joe, which at the time I kind of was, to question. Now, it's been a long time since 9/11. It's been a long time since the war on terror has begun, but it hasn't ended yet, has it? It is 2019, and in a couple more years, we will have been involved in a conflict with lots and lots of disparate ghouls and demons for two fucking decades. Now, that's still a couple years away, but sure is shit closer than 2001. Okay? Way closer than that. Back in 2001, if you had told me that this war on terror would last 20 years, okay, if you had said that to me, I would have said, you're insane. That is madness. Yeah, there were crazy-ass neocons saying this could be a war that lasts 100 years, but at the time I thought that was fucking rhetoric. I mean, again, it's a question of what you're willing to... It is a question of how skeptical you're willing to be when it comes to quote-unquote trusted institutions. So let's talk about some of these questions. And again, my suggestion after you listen to this podcast, if you choose to, is to do your own fucking research, because these are really just questions. I don't have all the answers, but I do have some basic questions, and it's not a long list, and it's not a definitive list, and I wouldn't even claim it's an original list. Like, I think that a lot of these questions are probably things that you would find in the documentary Loose Change. A lot of these questions have been bouncing around the world of 9/11 truthers for, like I said, it's going to be 20 years here in a couple more years, but for almost 20 years, these questions have been bouncing around. So the first question is this: how many steel frame buildings, since steel frame buildings were used as a design construct or model, since they have been part of that technical framework, which basically goes back to the 19th century, how many steel frame buildings have collapsed symmetrically in the way that those buildings collapsed? How many of those buildings have collapsed because of fire? I did some cursory research into this. Basically, this never happens. These types of buildings never collapse because of fire, okay? So that's one of those questions, the first one. The second one is this: how is it that a modern passenger aircraft that's basically a big aluminum shell, a lot of very lightweight metals for obvious aerodynamic reasons, how is it that this big aluminum shell hit the buildings, hit the towers, and caused all that damage. It seems like in a battle between the World Trade Center and any passenger airplane, or even any five aluminum darts going, you know, 400 or 500 miles an hour, I would still, if I were wagering, say the building's going to win. I mean, these are basically engineered mountains. Yes, you would cause damage. Yes, people would die. But the likelihood that the building would collapse seems pretty low. So that's the second kind of question. How is it these airplanes did this? The third question, which I've already alluded to, is how are these collapses symmetric? Now, keep in mind, if you want to sell me on the idea that these aluminum darts going 400 or 500 miles an hour, filled with basically diesel, how did these darts cause a symmetric collapse? Because when I saw the second building collapse, it looked exactly like a controlled demolition. The building was collapsing at free fall speed. Now, what they want you to believe is that in about 10 or 15 or 20 minutes, all of the jet fuel spilled out of the planes and caused the girders, the core steel girders, which, you know, also were surrounded by concrete, to superheat and melt. Never in the history of diesel fuel or jet fuel and high-grade steel has this ever fucking happened. Never. It's not that it happened once or twice, except for 9/11. It never happened before. It never happened after. How the fuck did these buildings collapse symmetrically, basically into themselves, as a result of an asymmetric collision? That shit does not add up. I could totally understand, well, not really, but I could at least stretch my plausibility to to say, okay, the planes hit the buildings and the buildings kind of, the top part fell off. Like, essentially, it would be like cutting the building in half. I can kind of almost allow myself to believe that the steel girders would weaken enough to cause an asymmetric collapse. But how the fuck do you get a symmetric collapse out of an asymmetric physical collision? The physics doesn't work. The vectors don't work. The energy model doesn't work. The fourth thing is Building 7. You know, Building 7, even to this day, even though it's obvious that even the owner of the building, you know, even the owner of that particular building, I always forget his name, but even the owner of the building said some things about pulling the building. And so, you know, the term pull in the world of controlled demolition means, you know, set it off, take it down. How the fuck did they set up all those fucking explosives in Building 7 so that only a few hours later, it also collapses symmetrically? Now, there's two schools of thought. One school of thought is, well, the firefighters, while the thing was on fire, hastily went in with high explosives and set it up for a controlled demolition. If you've ever spoken to somebody that does controlled demolition work, they will tell you that this is not something you do in 6 or 7 fucking hours. This is something that typically takes, you know, a few fucking days. And for a non-trivial controlled demolition, for example, like the King Dome in our own little city of Seattle, it could take weeks to set the thing up. So how the fuck, on 9/11, in the space of a few hours, did they set up all the explosives to take out Building 7? And if it wasn't because of explosives, why the fuck did it collapse? It wasn't hit by an airplane. There is no way in hell that the collapse of the other two buildings was going to create some type of chain reaction to cause it to collapse and none of the other buildings nearby. That is insane. So Building 7 is a question mark. The fifth thing is this issue of blame. You know, I kind of went over this already, so I'm not going to spend too much time on this. But how the fuck did we know so quickly it was Osama bin Laden? I mean, really, it's not like he's the only asshole that hates us, okay? The other Islamic folks who tried to take down the World Trade Center back in 1993, I believe, I think it was 93, they were not related directly to Osama bin Laden. I don't think there's any evidence that the Muslim Brotherhood at that time was Al-Qaeda. So again, how the hell did we know so quickly after 9/11 that it had to be Osama bin Laden? There are lots of people in the world that hate our fucking guts, lots of terrorist organizations. So if we knew that so fucking quickly, if within 2 days we were so confident that we knew who was responsible that we would start bombing fucking Afghanistan, then the question I ask is, why the fuck didn't we know before 9/11? Now, of course, there's lots of revisionist history that basically describes this as, well, we did know, Dan. We just didn't act on it. You know, these various organizations and intelligence weren't talking to each other. Okay, I can kind of buy that. But still, if that's your basic argument, why would you contend that more of that government bureaucracy will make it more effective? That's called insanity. When you do the same stupid thing over and over again, that's called crazy. So if your contention is, well, Dan, government was so fucking incompetent that even though it knew Osama bin Laden did it, it really had no ability to prevent it from happening, then why the fuck would you give the government another fucking dollar? It's not as if they were on welfare, okay? It's not as if it wasn't like, what, a day before that Rumsfeld said, excuse me, there's a couple trillion dollars with a T missing from the DOD. Yeah, these people had money. They had resources. So how the fuck did it happen? And yet somehow they knew afterwards who did it. It doesn't seem plausible to me. The next question has to do with the Pentagon. I have seen one grainy video of the Pentagon attack, and it looks like shit. I don't even think it's real. If it is real, it was bleached out and modified. But why do we have so few camera angles, so few sources of video footage on the Pentagon? That's just a question. It might have an answer, but I don't see one that's plausible. The next thing about the Pentagon, which I've covered a little bit, but I'm going to go into. The toughest part, as I stated, of a modern passenger aircraft, the part that contains the heaviest metals that would do the most fucking damage, so dangerous that there's actually a Kevlar shroud around the fucking turbine engine. Okay, you look at the picture of the Pentagon, you see one hole. What you should see are essentially two big fucking holes where the engines flew through, and maybe, yeah, some damage in the middle. But the most damage, the most kinetic damage, is going to come from those fucking titanium and steel engines. That didn't happen at the Pentagon, so that's an interesting question. What was going on there? Next question has to do with what we did after 9/11. And this is something we all know, but I have to bring it up. We all know that the weapons of mass destruction shit was a load of bullshit. But how the fuck did we connect Saddam Hussein to 9/11? And why the fuck did Americans go along with that bullshit? I can tell you that in February of 2003, I stood in a protest, you know, in the freezing cold against the coming war in Iraq. Of course, if I'd realized at the time how much bullshit was in the anti-war movement in this country, I wouldn't have been there. But again, I had a girlfriend. I was getting laid. It seemed to make fucking sense. At the time, I was opposed to the war. But if I knew then what I know now, I would have realized that too was a kind of psyop. So yeah, the war in Iraq is one of the most implausible parts of that story. And we started going to war in Iraq barely 2 years, not even 2 years after 9/11. Not even 2 years after 9/11, we're blowing the fuck out of Iraq. And last but not least has to do with goals. You know, one of the things that I was told when I was training as an officer, and now it seems like pure propaganda, but one of the narratives post-Vietnam was this thing that, well, after Vietnam, we would never go into a conflict again without clear objectives. What the fuck? What the fuck is the clear objective of the war on terror? How the fuck is a concept, terror, an objective, and how do you use war, which is one kind of terror, to kill terror? There was never a clear objective. There was never a clear end state. The reason why we are still essentially in a kind of quasi-douchey state of war today is because there is no fucking goal other than tyranny and control. I mean, if you ask me, looking at this from a systems perspective, what is the goal of this war? It's not about terrorists, because there's plenty of evidence that we're creating terrorists, we're engineering terrorists. ISIS, which is the latest incarnation that we've created, yeah, there's something that came from our assholes. So the thing about this whole war on terror, and this is where I want to leave it with these questions at least, is what was the goal? If we think of this in terms of revenge, because really the day after 9/11, the people that couldn't question the story, the people that couldn't accept it, like my boss, for example, I had a great boss at Rolls-Royce. She was an excellent boss, probably one of the best bosses I've ever had. But like the day after 9/11, she comes to my cube and says, where's your lapel pen? Where's your pen? Where's your flag pen? I said, what do you mean? Well, you should be wearing a flag pen. And I tried to explain to her that at least one of the fringe benefits of being a veteran is you don't have to wear the flag on your fucking shirt. And I didn't say it that way, but I tried to explain in simple terms that that's, you know, jingoist bullshit. And I just didn't believe in it. And she was in shock. So basically, if it was revenge, if the point was revenge, pure hatred of the damage done, so let's do the butcher's bill. We lost somewhere around, you know, 3,000 and change. Let's call it 4,000 people, plus or minus, probably minus. But the point is, if you believe the government, we lost somewhere around that 3,500 people, right? Probably in the first 2 months of bombing Afghanistan, we killed, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 times that number just in civilians, just in men, women, and children dead. So if the whole point of the war on terror was a chastisement, which is a kind of military operation, a chastisement, so you know, is a military operation where you enter a territory, you cause some damage, and you fucking leave, okay? For example, General Blackjack Pershing, 1915, the Mexican border. They sent the army into Mexico to chase Pancho Villa, okay? Did they have any real strategic goal of holding territory in Mexico? No. The goal was basically to teach him a lesson. And whether it actually did or not is a whole nother fucking question. Chastisements have been military strategy for a very long time. In some ways, the Franco-Prussian War of 1870 was a kind of chastisement. It wasn't strictly one, but it was kind of one. The Germans never held on to France. They probably could have. They never held on to Paris. They let the Parisians destroy themselves. But the Germans did win the war, the Franco-Prussian War. So if the goal of the war on terror is revenge, I would say at this point, with official sources saying, just in terms of men, women, and children, civilians, that we've killed hundreds and hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, we can stop. We've killed plenty. If this is a revenge game, which is a terribly stupid fucking game to play, but if this is a revenge game, we've gotten our butcher's bill. We've murdered a shitload of people. There are a lot of people who will never have children. They'll never go to college. They'll never live a life. They'll never dream. They will never do shit because we turned them into bloody paste. And we did that well over the number we lost on 9/11. So if the goal was to get fucking even, ladies and gentlemen, we did it. We're done. We should, you know, pick up and move the fuck home. So let's say it's not revenge. Let's say it's justice. Well, what justice? If this was actually about justice, the very first fucking thing we would have done, the very first thing we would have done, the very first plan we would have put into action would have been to analyze 9/11. We would have had the FBI, the CIA, we would have had external sources, we would have had the press. There would have been a million minds focused on what happened. And then after we figured out what happened, then we would have taken action. That would have been justice. The fact that we came to a conclusion so quickly and then destroyed all the evidence doesn't really speak to justice to me. It speaks to something kind of crummy and shitty. So it's not about revenge. It's not about justice. Is it about holding territory? Well, I mean, I think we're getting closer to the truth. If you ask me, the goal of 9/11 was exactly what was proposed by the neocons in the 90s. They wanted, they desired a Pearl Harbor type event to justify a general invasion of the Middle East, to take over, essentially to take over countries and to topple governments. They wanted a moral argument, you know, jus ad bellum, as they taught us in just war theory. They wanted a casus belli of justice to go into the Middle East, even if it was fake, to take over resources and, you know, probably to control the flow of oil and natural gas and other energy sources. And it may be worse than that. It may be worse than just, you know, an American desire for hegemony, to be a hegemon in the Middle East. It could also involve Israel. I don't want to go into that because every time you mention the word Israel, you get a whole bunch of people coming back to you and saying you're an anti-Semite. Well, no, I don't hate Jewish people. And yes, I think Zionism and Israel are both bullshit. But whatever the point is, this third possibility of what the plan was is the most likely. That the plan was not about revenge or justice because the whole thing was contrived. The plan was to rig up a false flag to provide some kind of really shitty, flimsy moral justification for taking over significant portions of the Middle East and the world oil supply. And as far as Afghanistan goes, listen, Afghanistan's a fucking mess. We're going to leave Afghanistan worse than how we found it. And within 10 years, the Taliban will be running Afghanistan again. So I got to tell you, yeah, that's a giant fucking fail. And at least the whole Kevin Bacon, how many degrees of separation thing, at least there's kind of a really shitty argument for Afghanistan. How the fuck do you connect Iraq? You can't. So this is a rant because I guess, I don't know, I haven't really spoken much about 9/11. When I was married, when you're married, you compromise. And at the time when you compromise and you're married, you say to yourself, well, compromise, maybe it's not a dirty word. But as I've gotten older, I've come to realize compromise is mostly a really dirty word. It's a shitty thing. If you compromise your integrity in physical terms, it's kind of like a ship at sea, a big steel ship that loses a section and starts filling with water. Every time that happens, the hull gets weaker, the ship's buoyancy gets worse. You're compromising the integrity of that steel vessel. So compromise was my justification at the time. But yeah, I mean, I think when I was married, I couldn't talk about these issues because I just felt there was a comfortable narrative that made my significant other feel okay. And then there was the uncomfortable narrative. My ex really mostly believed that the government was mostly run by people who were mostly okay. I don't know that she trusted the Defense Department, but she did. She was very much a statist. She pretty much, you know, she trusted the government. So if you question these stories, especially after watching some South Park episode that makes fun of 9/11 truthers, you look like a fool. So yeah, at the time, I think I compromised my own intellectual integrity because I didn't want to rock the boat, not just of my personal life, but my professional life. You know, in the early 2000s, I was switching careers. I was learning and going into software engineering and computer programming. And I just was so focused on programming computers and learning that particular profession, that skill set. I just think that and a few other things combined to make me not very questioning. And, you know, maybe I, like so many other Americans, always kind of knew the truth. I always kind of knew that the story was bullshit. But it's sort of like, what do you want to do with your life? I mean, at what point are you willing to put down whatever you're doing, to stop working, and to say, this must end? I think given that we have been quote-unquote at war of some sort with the TSA shoving shit up our butts for some reason for almost 20 years now. And no matter how you feel about 9/11, you have to be getting tired of this bullshit. I mean, let's say you believe the story. Can you at least accept that we've killed a lot of people? And if it is simply a question of getting some kind of crude military justice, it's been done. Can you accept the possibility that we're never going to shape Afghanistan into Maine or Connecticut or Colorado? It's not going to happen. Afghanistan has been a giant black hole for military forces, for imperial armies, since really Alexander the Great and before. So can we at least accept at this point that Afghanistan is a fucking historical basket case and no amount of U.S. resources, no matter how you feel about 9/11, no amount of money is going to solve that problem? That's the thing. I think that even the hardcore believers, even the people that fought these wars and came back kind of intact and with a lot of cognitive dissonance, even these people who have stake, you know, sort of a stake in the game or, you know, whatever, everyone's getting tired. At this point, it seems like a giant bullshit endeavor. And so even if you believe part of the story, the fact that it is becoming this never-ending hell is why so many people, no matter what their political stripe, are questioning it. You know, they're asking questions. How did these buildings collapse, you know? How did we have so many answers at the wrong time? I think it's so wonderful that we knew within 24, 48 hours after 9/11 who did what when. But it would have been excellently fucking convenient if we'd known that shit 72 hours before. I'm just saying, I'm not trying to be a jackass, but really, we were so fucking good after the fact of knowing exactly what happened. It's just curiously strange that we were so fucked up the one or two days before. And it is totally random and completely unrelated that Donald Rumsfeld revealed to the world, basically, I think the day before, that the Department of Defense was in, you know, basically had lost a couple $1 trillion. Well, 9/11 took care of that problem. There wasn't a lot of need to dig too deep there, especially given that the quote-unquote aircraft hit the Pentagon and caused a single hole, even though the toughest part of the airplane are the two engines. Yeah, it just miraculously took out some offices that contained, you know, the records for all that missing fucking money. It's all just a random coincidence, right? And yet, with the Steele dossier and all the fucking coincidental shit around Trump and Russia, we are expected to believe, according to the mainstream media, the whole fucking Russia collusion story that is weak as fucking shit, and yet we don't need to be questioning the airplane that didn't behave like an airplane that hit the Pentagon. These are the things that bother me. It's not simply that the story of 9/11 is so completely fucking implausible. It's that today we are fed these implausible stories and people keep fucking believing them. But don't question it. Anywho, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I am not CIA or former CIA. I don't know anybody in the deep state. I am a schlub who could very well be living in the streets within 4 weeks. So my connectedness is pretty much fucking zero. I don't know any fancy families. I'm not likely to be invited to the mothership when everything implodes. I simply have a lot of fucking questions, and I don't see any good answers. And I just, to revisit this, I don't see how you achieve two symmetrical implosions of two buildings that look precisely like a controlled demolition where the buildings collapse at freefall speed from essentially a passenger aircraft made of aluminum carrying essentially jet fuel, which is basically diesel. Yeah, I don't see how that could ever happen from an asymmetric collision, assuming you could melt steel girders with jet fuel, which you can't. So anyways, have a great day, great evening, excuse me. It's getting late. Not very likely, right, that I'll do another podcast. And this was my 9/11 rant for now. Do your own research. Do your own thinking. That's important. Actually, you should think. And not just about 9/11, but every other bullshit story. Separate topic, I was listening to, I think it's Bernard Grover on the Jeff Rentz show, talking about QAnon. And so you know, this whole Q, this Q thing, I'm really skeptical of it. It sounds really hokey to me. It seemed like a psyop from the beginning. If you're one of these people that reads these Q posts or produces these Q analytical videos and talks about where we go one, we go all, and, you know, believe or follow the plan and all this other shit, you know, fine, if you want to believe this. But like I said, just ask some fucking questions. You know, have some principles, have some values, use some logic, and ask some fucking questions and find answers for yourself. And above all else, you don't have to believe me, but please stop believing these fucking politicians and these fucking journalists, because for the most part, they're disinformation agents. And good night.